So good afternoon, folks. How you doing? Good. Looks like we're easy room to find, judging by the occupancy of the room. Chemo's used to much larger rooms, so.
Yeah, like I'm a bit disappointed, right? So anyway, so welcome from my side as well. So
Let's go ahead and get started, yeah.
we probably have the longest title of our presentations. So we actually had to cut it down a bit because otherwise we couldn't fit it in the PowerPoint. But again, the goal of today is actually looking at upgrades and migrations and the thing that we've seen throughout the years that actually cause issues in upgrade projects.
And to give you a little background, we'll do an introduction, so go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. That's James Petroski.
So I'm James Petroski. I'm a solution architect in the U.S. I do a lot of pre-sales, deal shaping, TQA on ongoing deals. So I meet regularly with a lot of our customers to scope upgrades and migrations.
Yeah, and my name is Kimmo Forss. I've been around with SharePoint like too long. Probably won't ever get away from SharePoint. I'm an architect in the Office 365 Center of Excellence. So I've been doing on-prem SharePoint for years. Now I'm more moving into the cloud, as should you. So I am a SharePoint MCM, MCM, MCA, a lot of M things and upgrades. And the things that actually I find really interesting is actually moving beyond technology. So for those of you who want to get a deep dive on the technical bits of upgrade, this is probably not the right session.
Yeah, so if you're here to find out after you do a DB attach why alerts don't work and what PowerShell script to run, that's going to be Sean Livingston's session. So we've got all that included in here. This is really a lot of the organizational stuff and the tacit stuff that we find can either make a project successful or oftentimes take it off the rails.
So out of curiosity, how many of you have done a successful upgrade project on time within budget?
Show of hands. Okay. How many have been a witness to one that didn't go so well? Large number of hands, okay.
So what we'll cover today is kind of why is it a challenge? What are the things that you need to think about? And also what we want to talk about, so what are the strategies that you should think about? So is it primarily, are you looking at upgrading to the latest and greatest from the previous version, or are you by some random incident still running older versions? So I'm actually helping a customer at the moment who's still on WSS 2.0 to move to the cloud. So that's quite a big leap. So how many of you are on SharePoint 2007 or older?
So how many are working with older environments? Okay, good number of hands. How many are other environments outside of SharePoint looking to come to SharePoint? Okay, cool.
Yeah, so we look at different strategies for addressing that. Then we'll dig a bit deeper into what are the technical aspects that you need to think about for each of those strategies. So if you're moving to the cloud, what's different from upgrading to an on-prem versus upgrading to the cloud? Or what's different if you're going from, let's say, 2003 to 2010 or 2013? But then the bulk of the presentation will actually focus on those things that we've seen throughout the years cause issues in projects. And those are kind of organizational aspects of doing upgrade projects. So, and at the end of the session, I'll actually show you a tool that I'm working on, which is kind of trying to rationalize the assessment process and taking kind of the tacit knowledge from the field and baking it that into a risk assessment tool that you can use to sort of assess your environment. And it has two components. It looks at the technical things that are important for upgrades, but it also has kind of a survey capability that looks and tries to find whether or not your organization is ready to do the upgrade. So with that, so this session is more the kind of process for those of you who care more on, well, actually, I want to go to the cloud. So we have two sessions tomorrow in which we're talking more details about what are the things that you need specifically to think about if you're moving to SharePoint Online.
So this is a progressive series.
Yeah. And the last session will be actually, we'll kind of look at, from an organizational point of view, what do you require to, so what are the requirements on your infrastructure? And if you want to migrate to SharePoint, like what are the things that you need to SharePoint Online specifically? what tooling, what processes, what things that you need to think about. So if the cloud is of interest, please come see us tomorrow. So again, those were the cloud sessions. For those of you who primarily care about how can I go from SharePoint 2010 to 2013, like these are probably the two best sessions during the conference.
These are presented by Sean Livingston. These are about as deep and detailed as you can go here at the conference on this topic. One occurred yesterday, the overview. Tomorrow's a deep dive. So
yeah, so if you want to go to the one that went yesterday, you have to get really drunk tonight and invent time travel. Then you could go back and visit that. So
come see us afterward if you have questions on that.
So at the end of the day, like the things that you should think about, the first question, should we upgrade? Well, and then the question also, why should we upgrade? And then can we upgrade? And should we upgrade should not just be because the Microsoft sales representative said that 2013 is so great. So you actually need to make sure that you have a good, rational business case that actually drives the upgrade. So you shouldn't, like, I'll probably be fired for saying this, but you shouldn't upgrade just for the sake of upgrading.
Yeah, it shouldn't be an academic stance, right? So you'll hear us kind of throughout say, you know, determine what your success factors are. You're going to have to use that as a reference point as you go through and make these really critical decisions to see, is this worth doing the project? Is this worth going forward?
Yeah. And honestly, if it's not, you should not do it. Then eventually there will come a time when your sort of environment is out of support, but then that's a compelling event why you should upgrade.
That might tip you over.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first one, should. The second one, can we? Do we have the skills? Do we have the competencies? Do we have all the right information in order to do that? And then the third one, well, we think that we know how to do it. Then how and what should be our sort of migration path? So should we go to an on-prem environment? Should we actually try to do a reorganization of our data before we do the upgrade so that you don't end up in a situation where you have like garbage in, garbage out? So I always use the analogy of upgrades and migrations. It's like moving. So a number of years ago, we moved from our old apartment to our new apartment. So one of the things that I discovered on the attic, a bunch of boxes of old C cassette tapes. So what should you do? Well, you should get rid of them. I made the mistake of starting opening those boxes and, hey, actually, I like this band. But I was proud. I was able actually to get rid of 3 out of 5 boxes. Guess where those 2 boxes are now? Up in the attic in a new place. Do I have a cassette tape player? No.
Yeah, and it's a similar thing. So we see a lot of customers that have, you know, a large amount of data over the years. They've had a lot of churn, a lot of stuff. I'm sure you've seen it. Stagnates, it sits there. So they say, we're going to use this process as a part to go through and do some purging, some cleanup, everything else. But when you start looking at the steps required to do that and the labor-intense actions required to do that and make some decisions, a lot of times folks will say, let's just move that box of tapes.
Yeah, people are making the mistake that, well, let's move everything across now and deal with it later. Well, guess what? Later never happens. So it's the other example that I use. So I have 2 kids. In Europe, we have these like Kinder chocolate eggs with these small plastic toys. So it would be perfect just to get rid of them. But if you ask your kids, can I throw this away? No, it's the most important thing ever. And then they forget about it. And there's truth in that when you look at an upgrade. So do you really need to take all the content with you? Like, there are cases when you do. So if your line of business, if you have strong business requirements for taking everything, for sure you should do that. But you should have a facts-based discussion on making that decision. And we'll actually tomorrow show an approach where we can actually assess a SharePoint environment to figure out and have that fact-based discussion rather than the sort of a emotional discussion.
Just an example there. So we're Microsoft employees. We have personal sites, my sites. We've had them around for a long time. We started getting emails a while back saying, hey, all these are moving to O365. If you want anything that was on your site, you better go move it, right? That was the approach MSIT took for that move. Some of our customers say we can't do that to our end users. We might lose stuff. Let's just move it for them. That becomes problematic when you have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of gigs, maybe terabytes of gigs of data, and you're trying to go to O365 or to a new environment.
Yeah, well, it's like company moving their My Sites, and you have like 100 people went to the SharePoint conference in Las Vegas. They put all the pictures on their My Sites. Do you want to move those to the cloud?
Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. For sure. Anyway, so again, knowing the right strategy, and then, as I said earlier, what's the return on investment for doing this? Because, again, you need to have a valid business case for actually doing this. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, to sort of paraphrase Clash, should I stay or should I go? That's the key decision that you need to make. So you shouldn't go just because you think. You need to have a good case why you should do that. But anyway, but we're all making the assumption here that we have a business case and we want to move ahead. So the thing that you then need to figure out, so what are your upgrade strategies? What are the different options for doing this? And in this session, we'll actually look at three different scenarios, which is the first one is actually the preferred one.
And this is what you'll see in TechNet. This is what you'll see in a lot of places.
This is what we, as Microsoft, always recommend, is going from the previous version to the next version. So for those of you, let's say, who are on 2007, if you look at TechNet, the path to 2013 is 2007, 2010, 2013. So that's one viable option. But again, another one that we want to talk about is if you want to leapfrog to the latest version. So you're running an older version and you actually don't want to go through two upgrade projects. So you want to leapfrog to the latest version.
So if you're on SharePoint 2001 or 2003 and you don't want to spend, you know, the next 6 months of going back in time and going through multiple upgrades.
And then the third one is actually doing an upgrade or a migration to the cloud. So actually getting rid of those upgrade hassles and let someone else deal with that pain, which is
us. And you can see that in the cloud it's rainbows and happiness. And
yes. And you can see the leapfrog to the next version, you need to buy something.
It's going
to
cost you some
trolley.
Money.
So we're really good graphical designers, right? Anyway, so again, as I said, so this is the model that you hear our product groups, our sort of UA teams always. So this is the way that you need to, they recommend us doing this. And again, it is the only supported way. So we don't have any supported way of taking, let's say, a 2007 content database and attaching that to 2013.
Yeah, and so by supported, Chemo means product support, right? So if you call up your premier product support person and you say, hey, I'm moving from SharePoint 2003 to 2013 and for some reason DB attached doesn't work, they're going to say, well, that's not a supported path, right? Yeah. You got to get to 2010 and then upgrade.
Yeah, and the same thing applies for other mechanisms. So you could do a backup of a site collection in 2007 or a content deployment export of that in 2007, you cannot import that to 2013.
The most common thing we're going to see here is around authentication. Most of our users claims, you know, we made a big splash in 2010. A lot of our customers said, we're going to stay classic. Thanks. We don't have a business case to go claims. 2013 rolling around, a lot of things you guys have heard about the weeks before this and at this conference, a lot of folks are saying, hey, claims is where I need to be. So that is the common theme I'm seeing when I go to customers that we're 2010, our patch level's up to date, we're in good shape, we're really concerned about this switch to claims.
Is that the right thing to do? Absolutely. Because we, in a way, have reached the state where actually a forest-based security boundary does not work in an internet-based economy. So the only way of actually reaching outside of the forest boundaries in a reliable way is actually using claims. So other things that you need to look out for is, if you're doing an upgrade, always storage. Again, because you're doing your upgrade, you have the storage on your old environment, you need to make sure that you have ample storage on the new environment. So let's say you're doing a DB attach, so you need to make sure that you have enough storage in your SQL tier. It sounds like no one would ever run into this, but constantly, this is one of the most common issues that we see in SharePoint implementations is SQL running out of disk space. So in upgrades, you need to make sure that you have, let's say that you have 5 terabytes of content. For upgrades, you should make sure that you have 15 terabytes of content in that the same SQL environment.
Hey, for the process.
For the process, yes. Yeah. And then
it's not a 3x multiplier when you move to 2013. it's during the process of upgrade, we require some more space.
So once you then are in a new sort of a steady state, then you're, it's not that your 5 terabytes will automatically become 10 terabytes or whatnot. It'll be 5, but the journey, you'll have content twice, plus you have content in transit.
Another question here is, what kind of search platform are you using? So, you know, it changes quite a bit in 2013. So a lot of our customers, if they're SharePoint search or if they're Fast Search, they have to really look at, okay, do we completely redesign what we've done? Do we just upgrade the admin database and the service? What do we do?
The number one thing, so I did a scientific survey approach and I asked my fellow MCMs, what is the most common issue that they see when upgrading and causing issues? And it was the developers. It's customizations. And Anyway, it is code in the environment, and for many reasons. And we'll actually...
We'll go through some of that,
Yeah, we'll go through some of that in more detail, but it's one of the main issues that hinder upgrades.
But all things being equal, as we go through, you'll see that this is the minimal amount of stuff, right? As we go back in time, or as we look at coming from another platform, that's different.
So other things like changing supportability limits. Luckily, they typically go upwards, so we can support larger content databases, larger lists. So typically, that's not an issue. But it is still sometimes an issue where if you sort of have had an unmanaged environment and you want to make sure that you're migrating into an environment where, let's say, your content databases are within the recommended size limits and things like that. So then the other one, again, going from, let's say, 2007 to 2013, this is where you need to pay up. So you either need to sort of buy third-party tools or find some community tools to do that, or you need to prepare your organization for a two-hop upgrade, so upgrading to 2010 and then to 2013.
Or you have to make the decision that you're going to actually cut some functionality or change the way you do things, right? If you look at the decision, you say, you know what, that's going to cost too much to replace that functionality or to recreate that template in an updated, you know, supported template, let's just start afresh. That's one of those questions.
One thing actually that is good to remember if you're considering the kind of the multi-hop upgrade is the fact that when you're doing that, your sort of a staging or the sort of a intermediate 2010 environment, you don't need to build out a full farm with all of the service applications and whatnot. Effectively, the only thing that you need in that approach is just the content service, so the web application that can host content databases. But the other thing to take into account if you're doing that is how long is your downtime for your end users because you're doing the two hubs. How long is your content read-only and what's acceptable to your business users? So that's typically one of the things that actually cause grief in this kind of a leapfrog to the latest version. So this is also where the migration vendor tools can help because they have tools that you can use to move deltas. So you could actually say that I'm starting this process and I'm putting my old environment in read-only, and let's say that this process takes a week, and then you could use their tools to actually take the delta of the content that's changed within that week and then move that across.
Yeah, and so from that point of view, as you can see in the red box there, we're saying that it's basically a decision point, right? You can either do the multiple upgrades, which to Kimo's point, you don't have to build out a huge topology farm because we're really looking at updating the schema of those databases. But that's going to take time. Or you can go the other way, work with one of the vendors in the pavilion, and just take the content, suck it out, skip the upgrades, and plug it in, import it directly into 2013. So you start going through. Go ahead. So the question?
So the question was, so if I'm doing the two-hop upgrade, do I need a 2010 license?
I believe the answer is yes.
As a Microsoft shareholder, I would say yes.
Yeah.
And you need to make sure that it's fault-tolerant, body. Actually, in projects, I don't really think you can sort of probably get by and sort of adjust. But even if you need a license, it should be enough with just one license, right? Because you don't need to build the fault-tolerant database
and
whatnot.
And it also depends on if you're on WSS or if you're on Perl Server, what are you upgrading? Yeah. Are you upgrading Enterprise? If you're going from 2007, you're going from the SSP, right? So The reason we both kind of stumble, most of our customers are enterprise customers that have the licensing suite, but.
Is there anything in the EVA version that would block that? No?
No, yeah.
So one other thing which is bolded here is looking out for deprecated features. So again, if there's functionalities that existed on 2007 that were deprecated in 2010, then it's very likely that they are actually being they have been removed in 2013. So you know that when we deprecate features, the way that we do that is by, let's say that I'm deprecating a feature. Let's take an example. So in 2007, we had...
You had web discussions. You had all kinds
We had the site directory.
Yeah, you had a site directory. That comes and goes.
Yes, it's kind of like, interesting. So in 2007, we had the site directory. Then we deprecated that in 2010. So if you had a site directory in your 2007 environment, upgraded that to 2010, you still had that site directory. That template was still there, but it wasn't exposed. But then now in 2013, we kind of reintroduced the concept of a site directory. So
yeah, and a good one, like if you look at what's new in SharePoint 2010, so if you're doing this double hop, right, and you're coming from 2007, it'll show you a lot of deprecated stuff. Does it show you anything about Fab 40? Anybody know Fab 40? Ooh, evil, that's what I heard over here. Doesn't say anything about that. Anybody run into that? Like, hey, this HR thing's not working. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the good benefits actually with a kind of the tools-based approach is also the fact that you can do things like re-templating. That's not a word. You can take your, I'm inventing words here.
I like this.
Re-template.
You're re-templating your templates.
Yes.
So you're redesigning your taxonomy, your IE, your...
Getting there?
Sounds like...
No. Anyway, so what you sometimes want to do is if you, for some reason, had these evil things called custom site definitions.
Okay. So you've opened up and done a lot of camel and you know, done a lot
of
stuff.
And you want to move your content, let's say, from your custom site diff that was the coolest idea around in 2007, but you want to move into an out-of-the-box site definition in 2013 or 2010, guess what? The only way of doing that is by using tools and content migration. So we actually are seeing quite a lot of that because a lot of our customers actually want to get rid of these custom site definitions because they're inherently evil. So they just cause pain and misery.
And it also, you know, it's going to depend upon how much data. So if you're talking, you know, I had a chat with a guy the other day, and he said, you know, we're really looking at moving. We're on 2007. We have a bunch of alerts, thousands of alerts, but we have 50 gigs of data. You know, so are you going to invest in a third-party tool? Are you going to do the multiple hop? That being said, the vendors in the pavilion have come a long, long way since, you know, 5-6 years ago. The tools have gotten really good for migration. So if you have hundreds and hundreds of gigs of data or terabytes of data, it may be worth the investment.
Yep. And one final thing, if you're doing this, this is typically a much more labor-intensive approach. So if you're doing either multi-hop or if you're doing this migration using tools, you need to make sure that you have enough people and enough hardware to do that.
There's no easy button. You know, the tools definitely help you get that way, and the upgrades will help, but there's no, you run it and you forget about it.
So the third one, which is my favorite, which is the toughest one on the wall, but actually has a lot of promise further down the line, is actually looking at the environment and considering, well, do I really need to upgrade my on-premises environment? What if I move that to the cloud? So the obvious benefits is like then high availability and disaster recovery becomes someone else's problem. Ours, but...
So just a quick question, any online customers that are using O365? Any that are in the midst of moving to O365? Any that are about to move?
Okay. I'd actually make the claim that everyone are on their way to the cloud. Some hasn't just started the journey yet. So eventually, like, you heard the keynote from Jeff Tepper, how important the cloud is. So it actually makes sense when you're looking at your environment, you should consider, are there workloads that actually could run in the cloud? Because that actually eases the pain somewhat because you can sort of get rid of, you can downsize your on-premises environment.
And this is really important. We'll bring it up in a few slides, but this is really important if you're going to refactor customizations, right? So if you have customizations, if you've got managed code, if you've got a lot of stuff that you want to run in O365, what do you do with that? You know, do you go through the process of recreating that? Do you go through the process of using the new app model? Kind of walk through that decision tree.
One other thing to look out for is actually the promise of Evergreen is really great. So we will upgrade the environment, the server environment. However, you need to make sure that there may be dependencies between the cloud environment and the on-premises environment. So again, everything comes with a cost. The Evergreen thing, if that happens, so the typical one that we usually see is kind of the browser supportability matrix. But actually, that applies to on-premises as well. So, you know.
Yeah, and Kimo started this slide with a really important point, and that was that it's not a light switch, right? So we go to customers, we talk a lot about O365, we talk about the cloud. A lot of the customers we work with, pretty mature SharePoint environments. So they think, great, I'm just going to ship it over, dump it in, flip the light switch, and it's done. It's actually, oftentimes, it takes a bit of work to get the customer there. So the value prop is the long term. Yes. And that's what Kimo mentioned at the beginning of the slide. It's we're moving down this road because we're betting on it in the longer term.
One thing that I highly recommend is when you're looking at your kind of site governance and your application lifecycle management approaches, try to think cloud. So try to sort of design your own on-premises environment in a way with the same premise as the cloud. So like, and the first premise is don't over-customize the environment. Like, it hates to say me because I love writing code, but actually writing code and upgrades is typically a troublesome combination. So some other things that you need to look out for is, again, the cloud, the feature set of the cloud is not yet on parity with the on-premises environment. So there are things that actually work better on-premises than in the cloud. And also we have, I hate the notion of the hybrid cloud.
Anybody heard of this hybrid environments kind of thing? Kimo doesn't call them that. He calls them connected environments.
Yeah, to me, a hybrid is a car. So anyway. Anyway, so the challenge is if you're looking at this hybrid model, you need to also understand what type of workloads are you using, what type of functionality are your business users expecting, and then trying to see is that achievable in the cloud. But also you have to understand the roadmap of the cloud. So like Jared said in the keynote, this is probably the last multi-year release. We will move into an era where we will have frequent service updates, which means that just because you can't do something today does not mean that you cannot do that tomorrow.
Yeah, so you're not waiting 3 years or 2 years for the next big bang. Right.
So some other things with the cloud, again, connectivity to the line of business system. So obviously if you're running, if the, like the application pool counts or whatnot is running in the cloud, those accounts will most likely not have access to your line of business systems. So again, certain workloads today are more cloud-friendly than others. So then if you are considering this, again, this will require tools. So again, talk to our vendors in the product pavilion. Talk to your local consultancy company.
Do we have any vendors in the audience? Yeah, any vendors that specialize in migrations, upgrades, that kind of thing? If we do, feel free to come up. When people come up for questions at the end of the session, feel free to stand up here with us. Yeah.
So again, if you're moving to the cloud, the other thing is, again, you need to think about your approach that, well, do I move my data or do I start with a greenfield, start with an empty slate?
Because, some of our customers say this is going to be a greenfield. When we go to cloud, keeping what we're doing on premises, partner extranet will be in the cloud and it's greenfield. It's brand new.
So with that, so I already alluded to this. So when you start to sort of defining your upgrade strategy, the first thing that you need to look at is from the workload point of view. So because this has a huge impact on when you're considering what your ultimate destination will be. Again, if you are heavily doing business intelligence and things like that, probably a cloud is not your immediate destination. It's your like future destination. So make sure that when you're doing this so that you have all your service owners representing in the team who's planning to upgrade. So the way that we actually have this, kind of the bullets with the checkbox, those are the things that you need to make sure that when you're doing the planning. And the checked items is that you need to get those so action points for you when you're doing the planning. So make sure that you have the service owners, because they know their plans for not just what we're using today, but what we will be using tomorrow in the organization. And also a key thing is kind of mapping the current workloads and the features that you'd use with those that are available on a new platform.
So how many of you guys have gone on to TechNet for 2013 and looked at the planning worksheets for upgrade? There's an Excel spreadsheet. It goes through. It lists out number of servers, number of web apps, that kind of thing. One of the tabs that you won't see in there are, you know, departmental workloads, departmental dependencies, that kind of thing. That's pretty wide, pretty complex. It can change by customer. But the number of times I sit with customers that have multiple departments, they have a KM department, they have an accounting department, they have whatever. One of them may be using some small, you know, bit of functionality, but for them it's mission critical. And going through and getting heads of those different departments and making sure you've mapped where your workloads go. So if you do go to the cloud and, you know, you don't have Excel services with embedded data connections or whatever it is, it doesn't suddenly kill a piece of the functionality. So that's what we're calling out here. In addition to going through and checking for wide list and deep list and that kind of thing, make sure you go through and you check your functionality. Where are we going? And that's the same if you're on premises, right? If you go from 2010 to 2013 and we've deprecated something, you know, since you upgraded from 2007, make sure you've accounted for that.
Yep. Another one, the size of the environment, again. So the bigger environment, the longer your upgrade process will take. Even if you're like doing the recommended DB attach, the bigger the database is, the longer it takes.
Just makes sense, right?
Yeah. And so also, so assess the site, and also the larger the site collections, the longer it takes, because the more work SQL has to do. So another important thing is actually not just looking at the number of site collections and the sizes, but actually looking at the content. So we did an assessment for a customer and looked at their usage of versions in their document libraries. So they had versioning enabled by default. And what we found out that 45% of their corpus was just old versions. And when we asked the business owners, do you need those versions? The answer was no.
And if you remember before 2013 how versions work, those are all copies of the files,
yes,
right?
My favorite one. So how customized is the implementation? So again, this is really, really critical. So the more you customize, the more you need to sort of plan for remediation activities when you do the upgrade. And Sean is 120% in agreement with this, because like these are the things that actually cause issues, because you may be using APIs that no longer exist. You may be have dependencies on the .NET framework version that's not available on the environment. There's a bunch of things.
And it's really difficult too, because those of you that have lived with SharePoint for a long time, your businesses or your customers' businesses are dependent upon it. It's a difficult decision tree. So story from me, I was with a customer a couple weeks ago. They started with SharePoint in 2003, got really big on it in 2007. Everybody knows the story of managed metadata in 2007, MMS in 2010. 2007, they created their own custom flavored managed metadata service, right? So they've got event receivers that fire anytime you upload anything, create a list item. They fire, read a term, you have to tag it. They brought that forward to 2010. Now they're looking at going to 2013. They eventually want to get to the cloud. So at what point are they going to actually back up and say, let's throw out what we've, you know, put into our system, re-tag everything, and start adopting what's built in the product for the last 5 years? So
the key thing here is actually when you look at the environment and the customizations, you should try to re-evaluate, can you achieve the same goals using out-of-the-box functionalities on a new platform? Oftentimes you can. There are so many times that I've seen environments that have been customized just because the customer does not know the capabilities of the product, and then there's been an eager consultancy company saying, you absolutely need functionality X, and we can build this for you. Anyway, we're guilty of that as well in MCS sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, that's for all of us. SharePoint has been so attractive for a number of years because it's got a great app dev model, right? Like, so, I mean, it's catch 22 in terms of how you implement that, and whenever you do decide to start, you know, reducing the number of customizations specifically around, you know, custom site definitions, manage code in the environment.
Timer jobs.
Why you're using things that customize the actual underlying underpinnings of the environment, right? So CSS, JavaScript, that kind of thing, that's not so much what we're talking about. It's more custom timer jobs, whenever you're actually adding code to the environment that may not be supported, you know, in future.
And heaven forbid, touching the content databases. We've seen those cases as well. Don't go there.
I mean, I realize it's a mixed crowd. I spoke with someone a moment ago that's an MCM, and then I spoke with someone that's, you know, brand new end user to SharePoint. So just for everybody, our databases are black box. They're not meant to be customized. They're not meant to, you know, don't go in and change the database schema. Don't go in and change the stored procedures. Don't do
that. Bad things will happen.
That is one guarantee we will give you.
Yes. Another thing that sometimes is like people miss when they're looking at SharePoint is actually external applications interfacing with SharePoint. So you could have a kind of fax solution that's storing faxes into a document library in SharePoint. So we used to have these things with Exchange in the past, quite a lot of sort of integration, but nowadays we actually are seeing more sort of a intelligent devices in the office that are actually leveraging the services of SharePoint. So if we upgrade the SharePoint environment, like, will our copier stop working? So there's those type of things that you need to look out for. We mentioned this, the authentication model.
How many people is this a concern? Like, you're seeing this and something you're working on, or it's coming down the road. Yeah, it's one of the big common ones right now, so we're going to have to change. Sean does a great job talking about it. We lay it out here in terms of the supported approach, the approach our customers are wrestling with. Just like Kimo said about, you know, upgrade from current version or N-1 to current version, we're saying upgrade the claims in 2010, then come to 2013. Sean will tell you why. The guy who's doing the upgrade deep dive, he'll tell you why. The main reason is that you reduce the kind of the risk area. So if you get bugs or if you have to troubleshoot because you've upgraded the claims, but you're still in 2010, you've taken out the whole surface area of issues that may have come from doing an upgrade to 2013, then doing the claims. So that's our recommended approach. That said, not every customer is going to do that. So the next approach is go through, and you can upgrade into 2013 with Classic Auth and then do the switch immediately after. That's not our first recommendation, but it is something you can do. Some customers feel a lot better about doing that.
Yeah, and there's functionality that you need to make sure that works. So one that I quite often hear about is like workflows in flight. Because if you have like the current performer is actually in a claims mode, it's a domain backslash user, then when we do the conversion, do we actually convert like the next performer to be a claims identity or not? Or are we in the lucky state that no one has job tasks to do because they just disappear? Again, this is one area that you need to pay a lot of attention to. And actually, quite a lot of customers have been still running Classic because their argument has been, well, we don't have any needs to integrate with the outer world.
We have no business case for claims, right? We're all behind the firewall.
Now you do.
Now you do. So, yeah, there are a number of reasons you'll want to really look hard at going to claims. We listed some of them in that first bullet. It's pretty clear in our TechNet documentation. I would say this, like, you know, this is probably the number one thing that I'm seeing with my customers is, what do we do about this? We're Classic Auth.
So if we then move, in a way, take a step away from technology and look at some of the key things when you're looking at the organization and the organizational capabilities. So the first one is actually who owns the environment. So in a scenario where you have an outsourced environment, so do you have access to that environment? Who manages that environment? And like if let's say, unfortunately, in many cases, outsourcing deals are very much about creating a status quo. So keeping the customer on the same version and then every now and then doing an upgrade project. So typically what happens is that the customers come to talk to a consultancy company and say, hey, can you help us upgrade? And we can say, yeah, and we'll estimate that it'll cost you X dollars. But then if you need to bring in the third party who's actually managing the environment, then there's inertia in the project because you need to deal with another organization's change management. You need to make sure that you actually get the outsourcer or the hosting provider to support you in that thing. And also, in many cases, if you need to do things like just, let's say, the normal upgrade approach where you don't have any access to the SQL server, so you can't, for instance, get databases because it's a different team managing the SQL. They don't give you databases. So again, this is one of those things that we see typically come up as suddenly we are over budget because we actually have spent so much time actually dealing with just the red tape of having multiple.
Yeah, and I was just working with a customer last week that is in the middle of a SAN vendor change, right? And they didn't have those two schedules lined up. So the SharePoint group, the SharePoint team was planning their entire upgrade and that entire schedule. The SAN team, the storage team, was planning their entire change and switch over, and those two weren't really aligned. That was a bit of a problem.
Yeah. We had an interesting Office 365 deployment for a customer, and they wanted to get away from this small outsourcer, and what happened just after the project kickoff, the outsourcer went bankrupt. That caused interesting side effects to the project. So again, this is just the reason why we're mentioning this. Make sure that when you're planning the upgrade project that you have all the relevant stakeholders involved. And the other key thing, so from besides the environment, then the skills. So how skilled is your organization in the new version? So is it brand new to them? Have they played with it in a lab? Do they maybe have a pilot deployment already in production? So the operations team, do they know how 2013 works? The development team, if you have. So is your development team still primarily focusing on writing full trust code, or have they adapted the new SP apps model? So that skill question is important. And finally, the support organization, because when you're doing changes, eventually help desk will need to be able to support your users. So more often than not, these are things that we realize too late in the project that, hey, by the way, our support organization doesn't know anything about 2013.
Yeah, you can have an extremely successful upgrade or migration technically, and if it falls flat and lands really sideways with the user, so from a user perspective, it falls down, it's a failed upgrade, right? So you get one chance with your users. We all know this, irrespective of SharePoint. SharePoint, though, has got a lot of surface area, right? So a lot of folks using it, depending on it. So make sure your teams are up to speed. Make sure the right people in the room and the wrong people are not in the room. Just on a side note, I've been in a lot of these roundtables where we have folks that are really loud about things they need, but they're not necessarily representing the business or the stakeholders.
So customizations. So again, as
make
we said,
lots of them.
Yeah. So like, it's a fact that environments are customized. It's very rarely that you see an environment, SharePoint environment today that does not have any custom code. And like James said, for many reasons, the fact that it is a developer platform for doing things, and also there are capabilities that the product does not do that you extend with code. So in upgrade projects, one of the things that you need to make sure that you have is an inventory of all your customizations.
Anyone have one of those? Anyone have a full inventory of all the customizations in your SharePoint environment? Yeah, it's like a unicorn sometimes.
Like, yeah, this is like me asking my kids, did you clean your room? So this is kind of a trust and verify type of thing. So, and it's quite often that you actually, we've had customers who told us, we have nothing, and then we do an assessment, and then they go, oh yeah, we had this.
We forgot about that 10,000 lines of code.
So there's a bunch of those things, and it just happens. So there's customers who are more, let's say, like ITIL or MOF, or have a stronger sort of a governance model. They typically know that, but we also have customers where it's a minefield out there that they find something cool on CodePlex, they deploy that to production, whatnot. So one thing that you need to make sure that you have an inventory of those, and you also know kind of who created this, because if it's a third-party tool, it's typically easier because you know whom to choke. So you can talk to the third-party vendor to see, do you have an upgraded version that will work in the next version? But more often than not, customizations are typically the end results of projects where the customer is hiring a team of consultants, building something for them. The consultants come in, they create the specifications, they write their stuff, they deploy that, and they leave.
And it's a big success, it works, everybody's happy.
And then 3 years later, when we're doing the upgrade, so then, do we have the IP? Do we have the knowledge? Do we have the source code? Do we have this and that? So we've actually seen quite a lot of cases that where we are blocked because of the fact that there's something in the environment that we can't upgrade. So I worked 2 years in a SharePoint Online dedicated team, and for our customers, we have a customization policy that actually is pretty strict, that you have to review your customizations, we have change management and whatnot. So, and the reason why we have that is in order to make sure that when we're doing the upgrade, we know the customizations, we know the source code, we know who created that and whatnot. So, but we had an internal property that we were using for dog fooding, into which we deployed a third-party component, and that was based on 2007, so like 5 years ago, and that became a mission-critical part of our operations. So then when 2010 came along, we talked to the vendor and said, no, we're out of that business. We don't have an upgrade for you. So again, practice what we preach. So do as we say, not as we do. So we ended up in a situation where we're keeping a 2007 environment in place just because there's a customization that's mission critical without an upgrade path. So these things are really, really important. So again, try to figure out who created that team. Is there an upgrade path? If it's internal, do we have the specifications? Do we have the source code available? Are the specification, documentation, and all of that? If not, you need to plan carefully. So how can we sunset that functionality?
Exactly. And a lot of times the assumption is we need to upgrade that functionality. But the hard question is, do we need to? And what's the return on investment if we do that? That's a really tough question to ask, because a lot of times you feel a lot safer just by making sure the functionality is there. If someone in some part of the organization is dependent upon it, you've accounted for it. But it's the right question to ask in many cases, because the amount of effort that might go into doing that as opposed to changing the process, it's a hard thing to quantify, but if you go through that process, you can make a pretty rational decision about do we upgrade it or do we just move forward and change the way we do it.
One other thing that we'll discuss tomorrow is kind of a tools-based approach. We're actually looking at the WSPs in the environment, looking at the features within them, and looking at where they are used.
So Kimo will actually demonstrate a tool tomorrow that'll go through, hit an environment, assess everything inside of it. It's a custom tool that he's got, so it's agnostic from vendor, but it's got a lot of the things you would look for to automated, you know, an automated approach, hit an environment, and get a report back of all the different things in it.
The other thing is, so it may be that the customization is available, like it's used in multiple places. So again, make sure that you're coordinating those efforts. And also, like the final thing is, like, what's the impact of upgrading the customization, or what's the impact of sunsetting that functionality? And make sure that you test, and make sure that you test even some more.
And that's part of the cost, right?
Yes.
So if you do that, you've got to account for the cost and the time to go into the test plan.
So how many of you have all the source code for all the WSPs deployed in your environment still?
How many of you have customizations and you don't know where the source code is? See, it's not a unicorn.
It is a tricky thing, because it may very well be that, like, because of the way that you have the contract with the vendor who's creating that service, like IP, like is that the vendor's IP? Is it your IP? Like do you just get the binaries, or do you get the source code? So all of that, it's really, really important to figure out. The other one where we usually see issues is project management. So you would think that by now we would know how to do projects, and some do, some don't. So some of the recommendations that we've seen is, again, this is common sense for most people, but you would be surprised how often we run into situations where we have the customer saying that, well, dear vendor, you do the upgrade, like, we'll pay you this much money, like, we don't want to deal with the hassle, it's your responsibility. Guess what? In all of the successful upgrade projects, the customer needs to be heavily involved. So my recommendation always is make sure that you have strong project management skills, and make sure that you have strong support within the organization.
Across the right teams and the right different leaders.
Yes. The thing that I mentioned here, so external or internal, so we've had a number of cases where the customer does not have the right project manager resources, so they hire a project manager from somewhere. The challenge with that approach is that how can you then typically that person is not known within the organization. That person probably does not have the support of the higher management. So if the project manager then comes and says, you need to clean up all these sites, you need to delete all those versions, the organization will say, who are you? I don't care.
Do we have any project managers in the audience or anyone who plays that role part-time? Influence is a big part of your role, right? So if you bring in a transactional project manager who's, you know, pretty much isolated and doesn't have a lot of stake in the success of the project, and they don't have a counterpart internally in the organization, even if it's the executive sponsor, you've significantly reduced the likelihood that they're going to be effective.
And another thing is, so if you're thinking that we'll pay this consulting company, let's invent like Microsoft Contoso Services or something like that?
Contoso
Services. CCS, Contoso Consulting Services. And we'll do the upgrade project. And by the way, you don't have a project manager? Well, we'll provide you a project manager. So make sure that if you get that project manager from the vendor, whose interests is that project manager primarily covering? So,
yeah, and how is success structured in the contract, right?
And also, honestly, I don't care if you're using ITIL, Agile, as long as you're consistent. So you need to have a methodology that you use, and you need to stick to that. So we've actually seen successful projects with like Agile. Oftentimes, when there's development involved, sort of doing sprints and doing the customizations, whereas there's more like infrastructure type of things, like ITIL tends to be kind of a more natural approach. But again,
yeah, you need to have a plan, and you need to execute and follow it and check regularly on your milestones. So whatever that plan is, whatever methodology that is, that's great. You just need to make sure you do it, because if you find yourself halfway through an upgrade project and you've kind of lost the plot and where you're at, that's, again, another one of those situations where you say, why did we make this decision? What are we doing?
Then, which actually brings us to the other, I started the discussion with, well, you need to have a strong business case for doing this. And again, it's so important in a project because, again, with a weak business case, when you run into issues, how is there a risk that we'll just say, well, screw that, we won't do this? Or, like, do you have a strong enough business sponsor that can say, by the way, we need to do this and, like, we need to understand the impact? So one of the other things with the business case is, like James was saying, that he had a customer where they were doing the SAN upgrade at the same time as the SharePoint, making sure that you, in your business case, actually understand if there's some other things going on and like if there's any external key deadlines. So we've had cases where the customer's data center lease is running out at the end of the year. So that's typically for us a key deadline. We have to meet that because otherwise the customer will have to pay another year for data center leases. The same thing goes for licenses. So again, in the upgrade process, make sure that you factor in all of those non-technical things so that you can sort of make sure that you cover those.
Absolutely. And if you watched the keynote yesterday, you saw some cool things with Wave 15 with the stacker products, right? So all my work in one place, mailboxes, that kind of thing. Oftentimes customers will see, or you know, vendors will see our functionality and they say, we want that. So we'll have different teams working on doing an upgrade, right? You'll have a SharePoint 2013 team doing an upgrade. Exchange might be getting upgraded. Those folks need to be in communications as well, right? So server-to-server authentication needs to be set up. The schedules need to be set up because it all comes back to why are we doing this? And if it's to, you know, improve end-user productivity by taking full advantage of these features, you got to have those teams represented. And the same with, you know, some of the dependent downstream things. So bring your own device. Any other keywords I missed here? Sounds like I'm just going through buzzword bingo. But it's the, you know, it's key. You can't do it in a silo, even though it's a big project.
Some other things that we actually found out to be really important is actually looking at the complementary technologies in use. So if you're rolling out Link at the same time, so let's say that you've started your SharePoint upgrade project and you're kind of looking, you've done your sort of consolidating your farm topologies from a geo-dispersed deployment into a central deployment, and you're doing your network assessment, and the network assessment says, yep, we can actually support a central solution, but what if you're rolling out other functionalities that are consuming network at the same time? Link is a good example. So you're rolling out Link. Well, that means that typically your network usage will change. And Link is interesting because actually you do three different things with Link. Which three do we do with Link?
Everybody gets the jelly bean that lights up, right? Everyone does IM chat.
Voice.
Voice. Video. Which of those do you think is most network intensive? Video, right? Yeah. So when you screen.
And there's actually a fourth one, which is the network or desktop sharing.
That's
so IM is like nothing. Like voice is something, video is a bit, desktop sharing's kaboom.
That's
so the bandwidth requirements of doing desktop sharing is you're consuming like 1.5 megs per second bandwidth with doing desktop sharing. So suddenly your central SharePoint architecture is causing pain and misery amongst the users because they're sharing the desktop in link. So again, those things are really, really important. And the other common things, so Office versions, browser versions, operating system versions, all that. So make sure that you have a good understanding of that and if it impacts the environment or not. So how do you actually then, we talked about these things and it's easy to talk about things and sort of create lists of things, but then how can we make this actionable? How can you actually do a risk assessment? So when you're looking at SharePoint, actually you need to sort of split this into two parts. So you have kind of the technical one, which is the trust and verify type approach, where you can have a tools-based approach for assessing the key metrics. So you would look at those things in your SharePoint environment that have impact for your upgrade. So things like we already mentioned, so the size, number of farm solutions, the types of environments. The goal here is to quickly identify that, well, we actually, in this environment, these risk factors are in place and these aren't. So, and have a tool-based approach to do that so that you can get the ultimate truth. Because at the end of the day, the truth of SharePoint lies within the content databases of SharePoint. So that's one part. The other part is actually the more consultative approach, so the organizational part, so which is typically done by performing interviews, talking to people, interaction, talking to different stakeholders and whatnot. The challenge today is that if you bring in three architects to assess the same environment to give recommendations, you probably get six recommendations. Three different customer facing and three different internal facing. So one thing that I've been thinking about for quite a long time now is sort of how can we take kind of a this sort of tacit knowledge that we have from doing upgrades, the sort of a lessons learned, and actually come up with a way to have a sort of a survey-driven environment that provides us with a risk index that we can then use sort of to say that it's not giving you the ultimate truth, but it's saying that, well, it looks like you have a complex environment. Please invoke the experts. Or it looks like your environment is pretty straightforward, and we can handle it.
So just a quick show of hands here, because we all have some kind of interest in upgrades and migrations. Of these two different types of risk assessments, who would think that technical is the easier one? And who would think that organizational is the easier one? Okay, yeah, we typically find it's the second one, so that's why Kimo's spending some time there, and we're about to show you something there, because the technical, there are tools, there are different approaches, bits and bytes are pretty straightforward. You have to do your homework, but it's pretty straightforward. When you're dealing with people and departments and that kind of thing, that takes a lot of process and, you know, direction. It's not as binary.
So
we'd like you to write a bunch of XML.
Yes. That's everything is XML, right? So this is a very, very early prototype of a tool that I'm kind of a, that we're trying to sort of a field test first amongst MCS, and then once we sort of a make sure that it works well enough, actually sort of provide that to a wider audience. Why can't I get that to show? Let me just do. I guess I need to change my resolution a bit. James, any good jokes?
Yeah, so good jokes.
Three men and a nun, no?
So what you're gonna see here, Kimo's put together a questions bank, and he's worked with some of our internal development teams to put together a harness. It's a Windows app right now. May deploy be deployed as a SharePoint app later. But the idea...
Oh, what? I've never seen that happen. So everyone, just lie down.
Just turn the monitor over. I think it's the accelerometer. No, but Kimo's put together this tool, and he's got an assessment tool that does the technical he's going to show tomorrow, like I said earlier. This tool is a lot of the consultative discussion, organizational type things, and you can feed it a question bank, which he's got embedded in XML. But yeah, the idea is that you walk customers and departments and folks through these different questions, and based on their responses, this is like a snow globe. I'm not sure what's happening here. Based on the responses, it will take you into different questions, right? And what we're trying to do is create a repeatable, automated approach for that second piece. Yeah. There are a lot of solutions that address the first piece, but not many that address the second.
Yeah, so the first part, I just hit a breakpoint in my code. So the first part is kind of a, we have this kind of a, the technical assessment, which will be the output of a tool that you will run against your SharePoint environment. In the current version, the thing that it looks for is number of site collections, number of WSPs deployed to the environment, and based on that, we calculate a risk index. And I'll come to back into more detail about those things. So kind of you're taking the trust and verify approach to actually assess the real technical environment, but where the rubber meets the road is actually then in the survey portion, where we are then sort of these things that we mentioned earlier. So what we've created, or what I created here, is kind of a pathway of questions.
Question? Can you zoom it? Do you have zoom it on your machine?
I don't have, sorry.
Can you change the res?
Yeah.
You guys didn't bring your binoculars, huh? Here, I can do it if you want to talk. Oh, you got it?
So let's see if that works better. It's better?
Yeah, that's better.
So,
and maybe we can read what it says on there. Yeah.
So what we're doing, so again, like we mentioned, so who owns and who manages the environment? So what we have here is kind of a as I mentioned, a pathway of questions. So you choose that. In this case, let's say that I'm managing the environment, and then so, I go to the next question.
Hey, Kimo, could you read the options on the screen?
Yeah, sorry. This particular case, so what's the current service delivery model? So in-house, meaning that we own the environment, we manage the environment. In-house, but it's managed by an external team, outsourced, or it's already in the cloud. So let's say that if I choose in-house, then I'd move to the next question. I'll go to the sort of my development team. But let's actually take one step back, and in case I choose that it's actually outsourced, so the model is designed in a way that depending on what you answer, you're kind of going down a different route of questions. So in this case, if it's outsourced, the question that we need to get an answer to, do you have access to the physical SharePoint servers? In this case, let's say, yes, we do. And then we're going back to the kind of main pathway. So again, do we have an internal development team working on SharePoint? In this case, do we or don't we?
Yes.
Yes, we do. Okay. So then are we changing the authentication model in this case?
Yes.
Yes.
This is like, remember those books you read when you were a kid, Choose Your Adventure? It's kind of like that, right? It's pivoting based on what you ask or what you respond.
So in this case, we are changing it. And then we have in the tool kind of pointers to the relevant documentations out on TechNet.
So
how are we changing it? So Windows Classic to Claims, Forms to Windows Classic, Forms to Claims. Let's take the easy one, the normal one, which is Windows Classic to Claims.
Claims, yeah.
So, and then we move on. So again, the question that we already, so do we have custom code deployed to the environment? And as we all know, yes, we do. So then the follow-up would be, do you own the intellectual property of these customizations? Yes. A bit of it? No. So let's say that we own some of it, just to make it sure. And then,
because that's the easy choice.
Yeah. And then for the customizations, for the IP that we don't own, Is the team still around? Is the company still around that created that IP? Let's say no. Then we move on from the customization to the organizational skills. So again, do we have an experienced organization?
Yeah. Okay. Because everyone's going to say they do, right? No one's going to say no. Yeah.
So, and then the same thing with project management. So we have an experienced organization. We've done multiple large projects. Then the question is, what's a large project?
Two servers.
So let's say that we have a somewhat experienced project. So anyway, so we have a project manager. And then eventually what will come up is with a risk index. So, and in this case, with these settings, we actually think that there's medium risk in this project. And the other thing that we do is actually based on all of those answers, we already are baking in some remediation activities. So in this, for instance, if we're looking at the organizational assessment risk. Where's my mouse?
And you may have noticed, well, go ahead, Kimo. You may have noticed as he was going through and making selections before he would go next, so he would choose a response before he'd go next. He had some of the mitigation steps. Hey, it looks like you have this. Check out this Technica article. Hey, so, you have this. That's all customizable.
The output will then be, so again, this is, it still looks ugly. This is kind of a 0.1 release. But the whole gist is that we're kind of taking these, making the art of consulting into more a professional approach so that we are kind of putting a structure into it. And for each question, so we also have what are the things that you need to think about. So in this case, so if you have a project manager assigned to this thing, so, well, you don't need huge remediation activities, but you need to ensure that you have ample time associated to that. So, and like, why is this actually, why do I think it's pretty cool? It's actually because this whole thing is actually driven by the thing that you actually just saw. This beautiful XML. That's the full screen. So, well, which you can't, but anyway, so what we've kind of taken as an approach is sort of a all the logic, all the pathways, all the impact and all the remediation activities are kind of expressed in a knowledge matrix, or I don't know the right term, but in a way, in a graph of options and answers. So the beauty of this type of approach is that if your particular customer happens to operate in a specific industry, you could just sort of add your own questions with your own weightings, and then at the end of the list, you will get a risk. One thing that I want to point out is that this is not the ultimate truth, but this is kind of the first best stab at actually looking at, do we have a complex environment? Do we have the skills within our organization? And if it's green, well, probably the risk of actually doing the upgrade project is pretty low. If it's red, you probably need to involve some experts who've done these things in the past.
So trying to put some process maturity around this, right? And what Kimo said about industries is really interesting from an extensibility standpoint. So if you think of modules that could be plugged into this, okay, these folks are in manufacturing, these folks are in oil and gas. There are some specific patterns we see or some specific tendencies we see with SharePoint with this type of industry. Or, hey, we're on O365, whatever licensing
education
plan.
Education.
Yeah, so the idea is that we build a harness, a rig here. We don't just give you vague topics of questions to ask and cool things to think about, but we actually give you specific questions and then remediation or risk ratings based on responses.
So what do you think, does an approach like this, would it be helpful for you to have something like this in order to kind of establish the risk?
Don't make us feel good, but show of hands if you think this is worth investing in for us to spend more time on. Show of hands if you think it's a waste of time. We should all go to Bon Jovi. There's one back there. I think I know him.
Anyway, so as I said, this is a prototype, and what we're planning, so the ultimate goal is, in a way, to try to provide this kind of as a self-service type of fashion to the, so that you could do your own assessment. But there's always risk when you're self-assessing because, like, in Finland, all the drivers are better than an average driver, which is not possible. But if you do a survey, everyone says, I'm better than average.
Right. It's like that, that radio show. What is that called? Where all the children are above average. No. Okay.
So anyway,
just forget that.
So what we're trying to do with this is kind of a, as I said, we are field testing this first internally with our people, so that you don't have to go through all of the pain and misery. And the plan is to sort of make this then eventually partner available and then eventually customer available. So again, as I said, we're trying to combine the technical, the fact base, and trying to provide structure kind of into the organizational assessment. And in a way, the way that if I look at the implementation, how the environment kind of flows. So you have these question pathways, and each answer carries a certain risk index. And that actually allows us to put the logic outside of the application, and then we can deem that, for instance, in our particular case, if we have a very skilled in-house development team, we can sort of lower the risk ratings for the development questions and vice versa.
Yeah, and the calculation there and the risk weighting to each of those responses are extensible, right?
Yeah.
So we don't lock those in. So if you think for your organization some response, if it's given, is much more important and increases risk, you can change that weighting.
Yeah. So again, one of the key things, but like these general recommendations are not just upgrade specific, but some of these things are like, it's like closing the door after the horse has walked out. So again, these are things that you actually, for upgrades, the site governance, if you don't have site governance in place, pre-upgrade, make sure that you do that post-upgrade. And the same thing as James mentioned, customers who've created their own custom metadata solutions and moving to 2010, make sure that you have metadata management planned.
That's a really common one.
Yeah. My favorite, or the key thing is, to me, kind of the customization governance. Try in your new environment to make sure that you have a defined process on actually on extensibility for the environment, that you have a way to say that, well, we need a customization, like what type of customization and who has the authority to, for instance, sign off on a full trust code solution that will deploy timer jobs, but which will make upgrades impossible, and those type of things. Mm-hmm. Again, project management, I already mentioned it. Make sure that you, if possible, assign a full-time project manager, preferably internal, because if you have an internal person, they typically know the organization. It's more likely that they have the trust within the organization.
Yeah, and that final bullet, I mean, you can't say it enough. It's about any IT project, but I find in the SharePoint world, it's really critical. Define the success matrix early and revisit them throughout, because you're going to go through a lot of decision points as you go through this, especially if you're looking at going to the cloud.
Yeah. And the other one, which are, if you're in a situation that someone else is managing your organization, ask those questions like, does our outsourcing or hosting contract specify details about upgrades? So does our contract say that it's a responsibility of our service provider to upgrade our environment to the latest and greatest within a certain time window after a new version is shipped or not? Do we have, as a customer, or do some of our, let's say, IT architects have access to the SharePoint servers, or is it truly an outsourced environment where it's just you're consuming a service, you don't have any access to the environments? And also, is there any clauses within the contract that say that, well, we need to make sure that we upgrade, but the outsourcer or the service provider needs to make sure that their teams, their operational teams, their support teams are trained on the next versions. So with that, this is the summary, and we are...
Yeah, show the sessions for the rest of the week.
So, yep. So related sessions, so tomorrow, so the two first ones are Sean's SharePoint upgrade.
Deep technical upgrade, deep dive, right? So really getting into the nuts and bolts.
The two latter ones are the ones that we'll talk tomorrow. First one is talking about strategies and best practices for moving stuff from SharePoint, on-premises SharePoint, to SharePoint Online. And then the last session is actually looking at the Office 365 deployment and migration. What Office 365 means for your environment, what does it mean for when you're thinking about an upgrade.
And I'm trying to figure out what this picture means. I guess most upgrades take place in a laundromat on yes. the floor.
Yes, they do. By a hip guy.
Yeah.
So if you want to go, go. We'll be here for questions. If you want to ask questions,
feel
please
free
use
to
the mic. Yeah. We'll be here. And if
thanks
not
for coming
here,
to the session. Hope to see you in these others.
And for sure, we'll see you at the bunch of weeks.